more than that, if you then look at what it is he transformed, which you might call the racial structure of American society, this was the area of American society going all the way back to Jefferson or Tocqueville that many Americans had looked at and said, this is the scourge, the cancer of American society. This is the glaring contradiction in a society founded on the principle that all men are created equal and yet built on systematic inequality. And finally, it was the aspect of American society that seemed the most stubbornly resistant to change. And yet, Martin Luther King, working in concert with thousands and thousands of other people, but leading a movement, managed to produce genuine, profound, and progressive change in the racial structure of American society.
Professor, do you think he would be surprised at the progress that has been made, or disappointed with the speed of it, as we are here today on January 17th, 2008?
As strange as it may sound, I would say probably both. There were, I think, two aspects to Dr. King's vision. On the one hand, he was obviously opposed to the Jim Crow South, segregationism, discrimination, essentially a racist or a white supremacist state. And that had a whole culture, a whole set of understandings that accompanied it. And he saw in his lifetime the most important legislation and decisions opposed to that, the Brown v. Board decision in 54, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act of 64 and 65. But he didn't see their effects. He didn't see the way in which America dismantled the racist state in the coming decade. And I think that's extremely important. I think he would be surprised and proud of the way in which the Civil Rights Vision transformed American law and American attitudes about race. So in that sense, absolutely, he would be surprised and happy.
We're talking,
second half to his vision. He was in favor not only of dismantling the racist state, but also of what you might call racial justice, or what you might just call American justice. He was strongly committed to the idea that we live up to our principle that all men are created equal. And in that regard, if you look at the racial structure of American society, I don't think you can say that that second half of his vision has been realized. In fact, I think we still fall quite short of that. And I don't see us doing very much about that right now. And in that regard, I think he would be disappointed.
If you would, we're with Professor David Peretz, professor of political science with a specialty in political philosophy at Sarah Lawrence College. How would you describe the second part of his vision again for us, please, Professor?
Well, you can go back to the I Have a Dream speech. You know, we tend to like to remember the line, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, by the content of their character.
Yes.
But it's important to remember the context in which that line is spoken. The lines immediately preceding it say, I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day, even in the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. And as early as 1965, in terms of thinking about what it meant to transform America into an oasis of freedom and justice, especially for African Americans, given the legacy of slavery, of the Jim Crow South, of dispossession in our society, King recognized that the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and the Brown versus Board decision, as important as they were not going to be sufficient, that we had to attack not only the legal, but the social basis for racial inequality in our society. And that was what he was working on at the end of his life, I would say from 1965 going forward. And he was very direct about it. He felt that there needed to be a social assistance program. He proposed a government compensation program for the legacy of slavery to begin to get resources to African Americans so that they could have social as well as legal equality in our society.
You know, Professor, people have to be out there, and I have to fulfill their needs. They have to be saying, who is this man? And that man is David Peretz, professor of political science at Sarah Lawrence with a specialty in political philosophy, 741, coming up on 742 here in Good Morning Westchester. Now, just in case you're getting settled and say, I want to hear more from this guy, you will. He will stay with us through the break. You know, Professor, as I listen to you, you know, I've been, as you know, preparing for a special on Monday, and we'll actually be airing this interview again on Monday. And I listened to the speech you talked about. And you know, just an insight I had. Now I'm playing student to pupil. Something that I realized he had in common with Lincoln, although certainly Lincoln was, as he said in one of his speeches, a lot more ambivalent about it all. But that, you know, that thought, that thought, word, and then ultimately deed does follow thought and word, because what I find in common in both these guys is that the way they saw America and the way they interpreted what America was or should be ultimately led us there. And I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but that's when I listen to you, I'm saying, you know, he defined what America really was. It's not what the people living at the time wanted it to be. Does that make any sense to you?
That makes absolute sense to me. And I think back to Gary Wills has a wonderful book about Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And he credits Lincoln at the Gettysburg Address with transforming Americans' understanding of the founding of our society.
I've read that, yes.
And pointing back, as opposed to the Constitution, to the Declaration of Independence, and saying that the proposition that all men are created equal, that's really what distinguishes our society. And I think what King did was to reach back through Lincoln into that founding charter to say what it means to be genuinely committed to that proposition is to live in a society in which the color of one's skin does not have any bearing on one's social fate, that one should have equal prospects for success, irrespective of whether one is black or white or of any other racial color.
Absolutely. You know, and when we come back from break, we're not going just yet, but I want to talk to you about the courage of this man. You know, the typical hardworking modern American, okay, has a great respect, which, and something I've always loved about America, for some very simple values, which are hard work, courage, intelligence. This guy really had it all. He was the whole package. You know, I read, in fact, I have it on tape, and it's been useful for my show prep, but I read his autobiography, and I don't know where he got the courage from. In fact, when we come back, I'm going to play that small part of his speech, and I want you to comment on the courage it must have took and what you know from your studies about how he knew he might get killed when he went to Memphis. Where do such men get their courage from, Professor? Where does that come from? Where did he get this from?
I think that it didn't come easily or naturally to Dr. King. And I think that it really took a long time for him to accept that he might have to be a martyr to his cause. That was not the way that he thought of his work in the first decade that he was doing it.
No, he certainly didn't.
And I think at some point he recognized that the cause was much bigger than he was. I think you cannot neglect the importance of the fact that he was a Christian minister and that, you know, as a Christian, he had an important model of martyrdom in front of him, as well as faith that next world would be better than this world.
Which he mentions in many of his speeches, by the way. He mentions Gandhi, he mentions Lincoln, he mentions a lot of people like that.
And I'm sure you know that in 1959 and 1960, he traveled to India. He was strongly influenced by Gandhi's teaching about the power of nonviolent
Absolutely.
Protest.
Professor, I've got to go, but if you bear with me, I've got to go to the traffic and weather, but I want you to hold it right there. When we'll come back right after break. Just sit tight. You may hear yourself on with the traffic guy. Just let him do what he does. Professor,
right.
You're wonderful. Stay right there. We're talking with Professor David Peretz, Professor of Political Science and Philosophy at Sarah Lawrence College. We'll be right back with him, but we're going to go to the traffic and the weather right now. I'm Bob Marone. This is Good Morning Westchester, 7:46. Let's go to WVOX and News 12 meteorologist Bryson Van Ecken and get his weather update. Bryson.
Good morning to you. Well, skies will be partly sunny this morning. However, increasing clouds will be with us this afternoon. It will be dry during the daylight hours today with highs in the 30s. Tonight will feature occasional rain. It will start as a brief period of snow and sleet around the local listening area this evening. However, no significant accumulations are expected. Low temperatures tonight remaining in the 30s. Morning rain on Friday, followed by afternoon sun with highs getting into the 40s. For the Whitney Radio Network, WVOX and News 12 Westchester, I'm meteorologist Bryson Van Eck.
Thank you very much, Bryson. 7:47, 30 degrees under cloudy skies. Time now for WVOX Westchester traffic with Craig Shankman. Good morning, Craig.
Well, good morning. Thank you very much. Yonkers wrapping up an accident from Nepperhead Avenue right by Squire Avenue. Also an accident seen in Tuckahoe on Monroe Street right by Dante Avenue. 95 looks good both ways. 287 eastbound building volume heading into White Plains. Not bad on mass transit. No delays on Metro North. Quiet also for the B-line buses locally around Westchester. That's a Craig Schenkman. Shadow traffic on the Whitney Radio Network.
Craig, thank you very much. 7:48.
Good Morning Westchester with Bob Marone on 1460 WVOX is being brought to you by our friends at Nick Russo Real Estate. Nick Russo Real Estate is your best source for all your residential and commercial real estate needs. Whether it's a spacious loft-style apartment you're looking for or a lavish full-service building with all the amenities, let Nick Russo find the perfect apartment or home with the trademark special attention Nick gives to each of his many valued clients. With over 200 condos and homes sold, Nick Russo is now the first and only choice for discerning customers in Westchester County who want the very best when it comes to a full-service real estate company. Call Nick Russo Real Estate today at 914-637-0307. That's 637-0307. Let Nick Russo find you the perfect apartment or home today, 914-637-0307, and stop by their new gallery office in the heart of New Rochelle at 8 Division Street. Nick Russo Real Estate, now more than ever, your first and best source for commercial and residential real estate.
This is Bill O'Shaughnessy, and it's Bolfamonte season, as we call it here in Westchester. For years and years around here, Mario Bolfamonte and his sons, Stephen, Anthony, and Benny, have been the royalty of the landscaping and outdoor maintenance world, and I don't exaggerate a bit. Their marvelous new headquarters near the New Rochelle Humane Society off Fifth Avenue and off Potter is not the easiest place in the world to find, I can tell you, but it's the place individual homeowners go on their own for advice on everything that grows. And it's also the place professional landscapers take their clients to select plantings. The Mario Bolfamonte and Sons Garden Center is a Westchester treasure, and it's the perfect time right now for a visit with your landscaper or on your own. Call 914-636-4428 and ask for Anthony, Stephen, Benny, or the great Mario Bolfamonte himself for directions. I'm reminded the place is actually a few steps from the new Gundelax power equipment location, and it's only a few blocks from the radio station where I'm talking to you from right now. It's Mario Bolfamonte time again in the land, I tell you.
There's always something happening on 1460 WVOX Westchester.
Good morning. It is 7:50 on the button, Thursday, January 17th, 2008. I'm Bob Marone. This is Good Morning Westchester on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. We are talking with Professor David Peretz. He is the professor of political philosophy and political science at Sarah Lawrence College about Martin Luther King. Welcome back, Professor.
Thank you.
And I have a treat for you.
It really doesn't matter what happens now. I left Atlanta this morning, and as we got started on the plane. There were six of us. The pilot said over the public address system, "We are sorry for the delay, but we have Dr. Martin Luther King on the plane. And to be sure that all of the bags were checked, and to be sure that nothing would be wrong on the plane, we had to check out everything carefully. And we've had the plane protected and guarded all night. And then I got into Memphis, and some began to say the threats, or talk about the threats that were out. What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers? Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
That, of course, Martin Luther King, and the very last speech he ever gave only hours before he was assassinated. You know, Professor, I get chills every time I listen to that segment. Now, I know you know a little bit about the history leading up to that.
Yeah, so that's a speech given in Memphis on April 4th, 1968, where he'd gone to support the striking sanitation workers. The context, by the way, throughout 1968, King and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference had organized what they called the Poor People's Campaign, pursuing economic justice not only for African Americans, but for all poor Americans.
Yep.
And so going to Memphis to support the sanitation strikers was important. The sanitation workers was important to Dr. King. He had been warned about taking that flight, that it was very dangerous, and he'd been warned about going to Memphis, that there was some intelligence that there was possibly going to be an attempt on his life. And he tortured over it. He wasn't sure that he should go. In the end, he decided to go. He wasn't sure he wanted to give that speech because there was a rumor that there was somebody in the audience at night who would make an attempt on his life. Yet he, in the end, found the courage. And that speech reflects the struggle that he had to find the courage. And it's interesting, before the break, we were talking about the importance of the example of Christ's martyrdom to Dr. King. In this speech, he's using the analogy or metaphor of Moses, right, of not making it to the promised land, but seeing the promised land. And one thing that I think is extremely important in understanding the courage that Dr. King was able to tap, to go in front of audiences where he knew there was a significant chance that his life would be taken, had to do with the genuine momentum and progress he thought was being made in our society, and the importance of his continuing his work to sustain that momentum and progress. This is in the immediate aftermath of the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Acts, and of widespread protests of segregation and discrimination in our society. And so I really do think he thought he was glimpsing the end of racism in American society.
I do, and I also think he was glimpsing the end of his own life. We're talking with Professor David Peretz from Sarah Lawrence College. He's a professor of political philosophy there. You know, Professor, it's 7:56. One of the things that has always gotten to me about Martin Luther King, you know, being I was born a Christian, raised a Christian, and of course the story of Christ is a wonderful story that he would martyr himself. But to live through someone doing it has just always left a profound effect on me. I mean, this guy knew what was going to happen. Professor, what do you think would have happened had he lived? Had that day not happened, would that day have eventually happened anyway? Would the civil rights movement have moved any more quickly or slowly, do you think?
It's an interesting question. It's really hard for me to speculate about that. In terms of the actual events of his life, as you know, in 1965, he came out as opposed. Actually, I guess it's 1966, opposed to the Vietnam War, and that cost him a lot in terms of his credibility with mainstream American society. Now, I think given the movement of public opinion about that war, it might have been that by 1970 he would have regained a lot of the respect of mainstream pundits and American opinion makers. But I think it's clear that in 1966, 67, 68, King is becoming, in fact, more radical. And what I alluded to before, thinking that the racial structure of American society is not only legal, but social. It doesn't just have to do with racist and segregationist and discriminatory law. It also has to do with the inherited social effects of 200 years of racism, discrimination, and slavery. That requires that the state not only dismantle its racist laws, but become an effective instrument of social change for making restitution for that past. King would have been fighting that fight. That's a fight that we still need to fight and haven't effectively fought. I can't imagine but that we would be better off for having someone with the power of rhetoric and vision and compassion and charisma that Dr. King had, making that case, continuing to hold America's feet to the fire for its current as well as historical racial injustice.
You're so right, Professor. And if I just want to say this, and then I'd like just to say goodbye to you, but that's why he has always been my favorite American. And there are some people who've questioned the holiday, and in my view, they're out of their mind. I don't know that any American deserves a holiday more than Martin Luther King. Professor, thank you very much for being on the program. Any final words? We've got about 30 seconds.
Bob,
yours.
I would like to take just 10 seconds to mention
a couple events that are happening around the city
to honor Dr. King.
Please do.
On Sunday, there will be an event at the Brooklyn Museum, Embracing the Radical King. That's occurring from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Brooklyn Museum. I believe you have to contact them in advance in order to get a reservation, but the event is free. And then on Monday, January 21st, there's an event I've attended a number of times that I strongly recommend, and that's a march organized by Manhattan Country School in Manhattan to honor Dr. King. And it really lets you experience what it might have been like to be involved in the civil rights movement. This is a school dedicated to the vision of Dr. King.
Absolutely.
A wonderful school. That event is occurring Monday, January 21st at 10 o'clock. They meet at City Hall.
Thank you so much.
March for a couple hours.
Thank you so much, Professor. We will talk again. Professor David Peretz, Political Science, Sarah Lawrence College. Have a great day, sir.
Thank you, Bob. It was
okay.
A pleasure.
Bye-bye. When we come back, we'll talk with a priest who lost 78 pounds for his church.
The voice of Westchester County, New York, 1460 WVOX, New Rochelle.
He just got home from the Middle East last night, and President Bush is launching into a bigger domestic problem this morning. The economy, which some fear already is in a recession. He scheduled a conference call with congressional